What else did Tolkien write outside of his Middle-earth legendarium, and how did they influence the stories that we know? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel we cover The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, The Witcher, and more of the best fantasy books and TV shows. The world of The Lord of the Rings was clearly the heart of Tolkien's creative output over decades, but as an academic and writer, he produced a lot of other works as well – poems, stories, scholarly tomes, translations, and so on. Some were published during his lifetime, whereas others only saw the light of day much later, edited by his son Christopher or other scholars. What follows is not an exhaustive list, but should give you enough to be getting on with. As a philologist, Tolkien spent a lot of time studying and translating ancient tales and legends. In line with this, his first major piece of prose, written sometime between 1912 and 1914, when Tolkien was as young as 20, was The Story of Kullervo, an adaptation of the same story from Finnish mythology, found in the Kalevala. Though Tolkien's Kullervo exists firmly within the world of Finnish myth, elements of the character, such as his unwitting incest and subsequent suicide via a sword which suddenly talks, clearly presage to the character of Turin Turambar, who we meet in the Silmarillion in the First Age of Middle-earth, and the Children of Hurin. Indeed, the dark, tragic feel of that tale stands out in having little of the hope that there is in the wider legendarium. The Story of Kullervo was finally published in 2015, more than a century after Tolkien wrote it. His first published work, though, was a lot more whimsical. Goblin Feet, a poem written for his then-fiancée Edith. That included rather twee lines like, "The tiny horns of enchanted leprechauns, their little happy feet." And Tolkien later came to dislike it a lot, calling it the unhappy thing, representing all that I came so soon after to fervently dislike. Still, it was a start, and he continued to write poetry for the rest of his life, sometimes having them published, but often not. Tolkien's next major work, which would eventually find publication, was for children, or his child. Tolkien's breadth of work, from learned academic tomes to children's stories, really was impressive. Although not written down until 1927 and not published until 1998, Rovarandom was first told orally in 1925. It was occasioned by the loss of a toy dog by Michael, Tolkien's son, at a beach while on holiday. According to editors Christina Skull and Wayne Hammond, "The loss of a favourite toy is a great moment to a child, and no doubt it was with this in mind that Tolkien was inspired to invent an explanation for the occurrence, a story in which a real dog, named Rover, is turned into a toy by a wizard, is lost on a beach by a boy, very much like Michael, meets a comical sand sorcerer, and has adventures on the moon and under the sea." Though very much a children's story set in the modern world, as is often the case, you can still see traces of Tolkien's wider created world. Near the end, they sail west, and Rovarandom thought he caught a glimpse of the city of the elves on the green hill beneath the mountains, a glint of white far away. That sounds very much like the city of Tirion, for those who have read the Silmarillion. Then came Farmer Giles of Ham, another shorter story, which was probably told aloud to the family in 1926 after their return to Oxford, the surrounding countryside of which serves as the nebulous borders of the Little Kingdom in which the story is set. It was substantially rewritten in January 1938, finally seeing publication in 1949. Set in the period of sub-Roman Britain, after the days of King Cole, maybe, but before Arthur or the Seven Kingdoms, it is deliberately anachronistic, serving largely as a vehicle for faux folk etymologies and philological jests. It's one of my personal favourites. Tolkien's next major endeavour, and one of his most academically significant works, was his translation of the Old English classic Beowulf into modern English. Completed by 1926, Tolkien continued to alter the translation throughout the following years as he lectured on Beowulf, with some of his revised readings of the text reflected in his updates. Though rendered into prose instead of poetry, Tolkien determined to make a translation as close as he could to the exact meaning and detail of the Old English poem, far closer than could ever be attained by translation into alliterative verse, but nonetheless with some suggestion of the rhythm of the original. In 2014, Christopher Tolkien published it under the title Beowulf, A Translation and Commentary, including in the volume commentaries taken from his father's relevant lecture notes, as well as two creative pieces, Selic Spell and The Lay of Beowulf. Selic Spell is Tolkien's attempt to reconstruct an older version of the Beowulf story that preceded the poem, whereas The Lay of Beowulf is a short poem of simple rhyme and regular metre, which Christopher recalls his father performing in the early 30s. Beowulf had a direct influence on the legendarium in several notable scenes. For example, the thief stealing from the dragon, serving as the catalyst for Beowulf's final quest and resulting death, was an unexplored moment in Anglo-Saxon myth, providing a gap for Tolkien to fill in with a story of his own, his dragon burglar being Bilbo Baggins, of course. Moreover, the scene of the watchman questioning Beowulf and his men on their approach to Heorot is directly mirrored in Aragorn and his companions being questioned on their arrival at Edoras. While on the subject of Beowulf, we should also note Tolkien's major piece of academic criticism on the text he taught for so many years, The Monsters and the Critics, originally delivered in 1936. Through it, Tolkien single-handedly redirected Beowulf studies away from using the text as a mere means to learn about the Anglo-Saxon world and Old English as a language, and drew attention to the poem as an artistic achievement worth studying and enjoying in itself. It was republished in 1983 as part of a collection with other essays, including On Fairy Stories, A Secret Vice, and Tolkien's Valedictory Address. The early 30s continued to be a period of prolific poetic composition for Tolkien, with three other notable narrative pieces worked on during this time as well. Two are closely connected to one another, The New Lay of the Volsungs and The New Lay of Gudrun. These were posthumously published together in 2005 as The Legend of Sigurd and Gudrun, a foray this time into Germanic and Norse myth. Again, Tolkien took inspiration for his own world-building. The fight between Sigurd and Fafnir in legend is echoed in the fight between Turin and Glaurung that we see in the Silmarillion, not merely with the motif of the dragon-slaying hero, but down to the specific tactic of hiding in a gorge and a surprise strike to the soft underbelly of the worm, with the beast's blood greatly affecting the respective warriors. Tolkien's other major poem from this period was The Fall of Arthur, an alliterative heroic lay or poem written in the same meter as Beowulf, and this time about King Arthur, so British legend. As you can see, Tolkien took a lot from any and all Northern European myths and legends. The titular Fall here deals with an episode first told by Geoffrey of Monmouth and retold in the alliterative Morte d'Arthur and the works of Thomas Malory, so a key part of the legend, but often omitted from more modern retellings. In it, Arthur's nephew Mordred usurps the throne while Arthur is on the continent waging war, necessitating Arthur's speedy return to Britain. There, Arthur is mortally wounded in battle against Mordred. Tolkien wrote what he had up to December 1934, but never finished it. This is typical of Tolkien, incidentally. He was capable of immense focus, but more often than not, left poems and stories unfinished as his attention moved elsewhere. We should be grateful that we even got The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. Much more, even within the legendarium, remained unfinished or in a constant state of revision. But talking of The Hobbit, after abandoning his work on King Arthur, Tolkien finally achieved literary success with the publication of The Hobbit, and soon after began work on its sequel. It was while niggling over the details of this sequel that Tolkien, sometime shortly before the outbreak of World War II, awoke one morning with a story fully formed in his head, which he immediately began to write down with uncharacteristic speed, taking just a few hours to complete. Despite his stated aversion to allegory, Leif by Niggle was exactly that. In it, the main character, Niggle, works on a painting of a bucolic landscape centred on a great tree. He spends so much time, years, poring over the details of individual leaves, making each of them perfect, that he never actually manages to finish it before being forced to make that journey which we all must take at the end of our lives. Yet, it is there that Niggle finds his tree, that he had been painting, not as a vision or art, but alive and fully formed and in its truest form, though with work that can yet be done on it. The meaning of this very introspective story, one Tolkien admitted was about him, has been discussed ad infinitum, but two views often come to the fore. Perhaps the tree in the story that Niggle is painting is the Lord of the Rings, and Leaf by Niggle was therefore a successful excising of the worry that Tolkien would never be able to finish his magnum opus, that he would abandon it like he had the Fall of Arthur before it. But another possible reading, and my own personal favourite, is that the Lord of the Rings is instead just one of many leaves in a lifetime's work that can never be truly finished. The tree is therefore the legendarium as a whole, or even wider, Tolkien's whole life's work, which adds an element of hope to it all, particularly for those in particular who share Tolkien's religious views, that it is all right that not everything was finished, and that he can embrace it and keep developing it in his new parish, as he calls it, and that the tree and the forest it is a part of will become, in its truest form, a place where others can rest and take refuge as they go on that last journey. His life's work was not wasted, even if he never felt it was complete. Leaf was published in January 1945. After the Second World War, Tolkien returned to the legends of King Arthur with a translation from Middle English of the alliterative poem Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. This was in existence by 1950, at which time The Lord of the Rings was fully written, but awaiting publication. It was posthumously published in 1975 alongside two other translations, Pearl, written by the same unknown poet as Sir Gawain, and found on the same singular manuscript from circa 1400, and Sir Orfeo, a retelling of the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice in a fairy milieu. Tolkien's final piece of prose, published in his lifetime, was another autobiographical allegory. Yet, unlike Leaf by Niggle, Smith of Wootton Major was written at the end of a long career, at a time when his own creative energies and artistic vision were beginning to dim. Tolkien himself described it as written with deep emotion, partly drawn from the experience of the bereavement of retirement and of advancing age. Although originally intended in January 1965 to be a part of a preface to a new edition of George MacDonald's The Golden Key, it soon grew into a tale in its own right, and a rather melancholy tale it is. Smith's story ends with his passport to the land of faerie being revoked and destined to remain for the rest of his life in the mundane world. It's the reverse of the sorrow mortals felt when elves left Middle-earth for the last time at the end of The Lord of the Rings. Instead, a mortal man suffering disenchantment as he leaves Fairyland for the last time. It is a sombre, even melancholic reflection by Tolkien on the end of his literary career. He would no longer explore those realms. Perhaps we should see it as the thematic accompaniment to Leaf by Niggle. Smith of Wootton Major brings grief and loss. Leaf by Niggle recognises that and adds in a note of typical Tolkien hope. As I said at the start, all this is just an overview. There is so much more out there if you want to delve even deeper. And let me know what your favourite non-legendarium work by Tolkien is in the comments below. If you'd like to explore any of these stories yourself, I'd recommend a great place to start might be with Tales from the Perilous Realm, a collection of some of the more accessible and touching tales we've just looked at, like Leaf by Niggle, Farmer Giles of Ham and Smith of Wootton Major. You can find a link to it in the description to this video for bookshop.org, which supports both local independent bookshops and this channel at no extra cost to you. And even if you don't want to buy that, I'd recommend checking out bookshop.org anyway. If you've got this far in the video, you probably love books as much as I do, and independent bookshops and stores need support more than ever just to keep going. If you'd like to see more videos about Tolkien and his world, please click on the playlist on the left of your screen. Or to support this channel, the best way to do that is to click on the link to Patreon on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.